The Gates of Horn and Ivory, by Francis Rosenfeld. Chapter 6. Land of Dreams. Hades is a water realm. Surrounded by Oceanus, it's crisscrossed by rivers and streams whose rash and unsettled currents can be heard in the background almost everywhere. From the quiet Lethe meandering between boulders in Hypnosis Cave, careful not to awaken him, to the echoes of the Styx, muffled as it flows through underground caves, the sights and sounds of water are everywhere, sometimes soothing, sometimes unsettling. The rushing waters of the underworld carved intricate stone tracery and painted the rocks in spectacular hues. They flowed slowly through sleepy valleys only to abandon themselves suddenly to grand waterfalls, diving into bottomless chasms nobody ever dared explore. The perpetual sunsets painted their watery curtains with rainbows, and sometimes, when the light hit them at just the right angle, it illuminated them from behind. The fiery river Phlegethon crossed the real waters sometimes, and their mingling gave rise to sharp hisses and clouds of steam, and turned its incandescent lava first to embers, and then to black stone. The placid river Lethe branched into a delta when it reached the Land of Dreams, seeping countless rivulets and streams through its open fields. Those who'd been brought to Hades through the Gate of the Sun could be deceived they were still alive when they reached this familiar landscape, only to be set straight when it changed without warning, lulling them into rationalizations in order to deceive them again. The spirits always found an explanation for why their world stopped making sense. Any explanation but the real one. Demarcating the end of reason, with the gates of horn and ivory into the distance, the white rock stood jealous guard at the edges of the Land of Dreams, a warning to all those who dared enter that the workings of their minds will serve them here no more, and once past it they will be tried and deceived by the Oneros, and get lost into their world of illusions. Hermes, the trickster, was the only one who knew his way around this realm. Except for Persephone, of course. The sweet bride of Hades was blessed with an insatiable curiosity and a gift for getting herself in trouble which had served her well, considering, and she couldn't bear the thought of having quarters of her own home in which she was reluctant to enter. So she defiantly stepped past the white rock, straight through the gates, into the land of illusions. The dreams seemed confused at first, not knowing how to approach the mistress of their domain, since nobody, god or mortal, ever dared cross into its chaotic, ever-shifting landscape on purpose, but they soon got used to her visits, and went on about their business as usual, ignoring her presence. She snoozed inside the gate sometimes, forgetting time and space. At first Hades panicked when she was nowhere to be found, worried she was taken from him again, and searched for her everywhere. Now he knew, when she disappeared, to send word through one of the Oneroi and call her back home. Persephone stopped for a moment, between the gates of horn and ivory, hesitant, even after all her travels through the land of illusions, to feel their polished surfaces under her fingers, a subtle acknowledgement of the fact that when one closed one's eyes, one couldn't tell horn from ivory by touch alone. Truth and falsehood felt the same to those who were afraid to walk through the valley of deceit with their eyes open. A flock of dreams flew high above her head, and their widespread black wings cast shadows on the land. A figure emerged from the distance, so far Persephone couldn't make out its countenance at first, only to note, when it got closer, that it was another her, its likeness perfect in every detail, looking back with curiosity and surprise, just as she assumed she must have. Another her sneaked up on her, and then another, and another, until a whole army of Persephones gathered around her, drawn to the unexpected spectacle of the crazy who dared enter their realm on purpose. "Who are you?" An authoritative Persephone stepped forward to get closer to her. "I'm Persephone," she replied, simply. A group of hers started laughing while the previous interlocutor replied, "No. I'm Persephone. No. I'm Persephone." The group reverberated her like echoes in a canyon through all the hers that were now drawing closer. "And what is your purpose here?" the first one continued, with a menacing look on her face. Persephone watched herself at length, noted she couldn't really pull off the scary look and planned to address this problem later, in a more stable environment. "Go away," the first one said. "You don't belong here." "But I do." She pointed to all the Persephones that surrounded her. "Don't you see? I've always belonged here." The dreams looked at each other, confused, not knowing what to make of the logical impossibility. Are you like us? A her from the back asked. Hermes showed up, seemingly out of nowhere, not a big surprise in itself, since the god of travelers could portal in from place to place, instantaneously, with a stern warning. Get out of here immediately. You're in grave danger. Persephone looked straight into the eyes of her old friend, and the likeness of the latter dissipated into a cloud of smoke, going back into the non-existence whence he came. She couldn't help noticing, back into the distance, that a Hades had taken a shine to one of the Persephones and was coming onto her, ignoring everyone around them. Another Persephone eyed the two with jealous eyes, grasping the dagger she kept hidden behind her back, planning to kill them both. Three other Persephones whispered among themselves, pleased by the fresh gossip, and one of them broke free from the group quickly to come tell her the news, with mock concern for her plight. Near a sorrowful rivulet of the Acheron, another one of her lay dying, attended again by the caring presence of her friend, Persephone the Psychopomp, who was waiting for her soul to guide it to the afterlife. Don't these figments read the script? Persephone asked herself, annoyed. I can't die. I'm a goddess. Sure you can. Phobita appeared in the guise of an enormous snake. You're going to die here. You're going to die, and we're going to feed you to the Cerberus. Aha, Persephone commented. Or the Echidna. He stopped to ponder. Maybe even better, turn you into her. A giant snake coiled itself around Persephone's legs, all the way up to her waist, making her look like the epic monster for a moment, and then flickered its tongue and slid its head under Persephone's hand, to be petted. It closed its eyes, pleased to be touched by the goddess, and then dissipated into thin air. Phantasis was watching her surreptitiously from her peripheral field of vision. She only glimpsed a flash of him in the corner of her eye, enough to see the latter trying to hook his intense gaze into the back of her head to rummage through the contents of her brains for interesting materials to work with. He stopped staring when he saw her looking, surprised the goddess could see him. He got up, uncomfortable, and moved over to a safe distance, so he could work on the new project she inspired without interruptions. Goddess, the most blessed among Olympians, we worship you. A giant altar appeared, where worshippers prostrated themselves at the feet of another her, who looked very haughty and uncaring, and who had retreated to the top of her pedestal, careful not to ruin her sandals in the pools of blood surrounding it. A chorus of hers sang her praises, their arms raised in a gesture of devotion. They were all splendidly attired with gold and fine linen, and carried baskets of offerings which they placed at the feet of their goddess, but their faces looked vacant, as if all their spirit had left them, and they kept going on inertia, animated by some external force. The scene looked eerily familiar, and Persephone rolled her eyes. A few hers, who had dared watch a stranger mock the worship of their goddess, shushed to each other and started conspiring among themselves. They looked around, fearful, and then abandoned their disdainful deity to gather around her, curling up at her feet like Dionysus's maenads, feeling privileged to breathe in air that was closer to their new idol. Okay, this is getting crazy even for me, Persephone had started to tire of the spectacle. And how are you going to leave, if I may ask? An image of her mother appeared from nowhere. How are you ever going to leave here? Don't you see you're trapped? You are a prisoner. Another her approached from a distance, smiling and ignoring the others, and when she got close, she kissed Persephone on the cheek and whispered in her ear. Sweetheart, when you're done having fun, can you please come back home? Hermes wants to talk to you. It's urgent. But you can't leave your prison. You only have yourself to blame, the likeness of her mother declared ominously. Do you not see you have no means to get out anymore? The gates are gone. You're trapped in here with us for all eternity. Gates, Persephone ordered, and the horn and ivory gates reappeared, as did the clusters of phantasms rushing through them into the world. She sighed in sympathy with the poor souls who were going to be the battlefields of those antagonistic illusions as soon as the latter reached the world of the living. Well, at least we know the mirroring project will work. Yardeus will definitely need to be protected somehow from all of this. If he's not mad already, he soon will be in this nightmare, she pondered, wondering whether the latter wouldn't be better off in the real Tartarus, which was still a milder punishment than handing him back to Ares.